Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop and trust your intuition. Through the wonderful array of guests we have on the show and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for the podcast. Today we have a very exciting interview today. Look, it's all about this is really going to connect with us women. It really is going to connect with us because it's about understanding who we are. And we go through puberty, we go through all this growth, we go through all this learning and this understanding, and we sort of get an understanding of who we are and where we want to go and what we want to be when we grow up. But then it all sort of turns upside down when we start having children, we go into the corporate world, we start to go along those lines, and it all starts to become really, really messy. Today we've got the lovely Amanda Kate on, and she is going to help us with that understanding, an understanding of what loss of self is. What does it mean? What are we doing? And how we can get that self back again. So it's going to be a really good interview today. So make sure you listen right to the end. It's really going to help you. I'm not going to say anymore because I want to have Amanda on because she's just so lovely. You're going to love it. Okay, welcome to the show, Amanda.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's lovely talking to another Aussie.
I know. I say that too because I have so many American guests and I love talking to them, but it's so strange when you hear the Aussie voice come through. So in the recording.
It
so
is.
Really nice. And Amanda lives right near my daughter in Melbourne. So it's lovely. I'm from the Gold Coast. I'm in the Gold Coast and Amanda's in Melbourne. So this is going to be a great interview. I want to get a bit of an understanding before we get right into the nitty gritty of it.
Yeah,
a little bit more about you, who you are, what you're doing, and I know you're
Well, and it's really interesting that you mentioned that whole what are we going to do when we grow up type thing, because I felt like I went through that in my, well, obviously when I finished high school, what am I going to do when I grow up, but I also went through it, you know, as my children were going to school. So I love that you use that analogy because I used it well into my adult life and in some ways I still use it. But I had a pretty normal upbringing. I was white, middle class, Church of England raised, did the good girl thing. I got good grades at school. I did what my parents expected of me. I knew that my parents were strict, but I also understood why. And we had quite a narrow band of what was acceptable in terms of behavior, how we were allowed to interact and behave and the respect we needed to show adults and all of these things that are, I guess, manners, etiquette, but also relatively restrictive when you're going through those formative years trying to work out who the hell you are in the world. And I knew through my teenage years that my parents were stricter than others. But again, I never really understood until much, much later how that affected me and the person I was becoming and the person I became. So I went, through high school, got into university, again, good grades, did the right thing, worked part-time, had a significant relationship that then broke down and I felt like I was just, you know, this unlovable. Most people who've gone through that first proper heartbreak understand what I mean. I just felt like I wasn't worthy, I wasn't lovable, I wasn't ever going to be needed again or wanted again or desired again. And that really, I guess, set me on my path in terms of my sister had decided to go travel to the UK, so she had convinced me to come with her. And I went to Thailand with her, came back to Australia, got my stuff together and then headed over to the UK. My two-year working holiday turned into 11 years because I met a man, had two children, well, got married, had two children, you know, got the beautiful home. And then when his role was made redundant, we decided to move back to Australia. But my family are from Adelaide and we're living in Melbourne, which is about 10 hours away. And the reason for that was he said if we can't be close to his family, we weren't to be close to mine because it wasn't fair, despite the fact I'd already lived however many years with him over there, close to his family and doing all of his family things. There'd been alarm bells from the very get-go in our relationship. But it was also relatively normal to me to be in a relationship whereby there was this power over structure. He believed he was ruler of the roost. He had his right to do whatever, but I needed permission to do even sometimes the simplest things. He was constantly changing the goalposts of what was expected, of what I was supposed to be and do and provide for him and all of these things. And I noticed I was getting wound tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And it got to a point in 2013 where I got very, very sick and needed long naps in the afternoon. I was just fading and doctors were doing blood tests and saying, you're healthy, you're fine. And I was not healthy, I'm fine. I found out after a few years of, I guess, ending up being pushed into natural therapies because modern medicine couldn't find the way, I found out I had chronic fatigue. And that then started me down the path I'm on now, where I realized the link between my physical health, my mental, emotional, spiritual health. And one of the biggest things was really finding kinesiology. I had gone to the doctor to get a mental health care plan so I could see a psychologist because I believed I was broken, that there was something severely wrong with me, because my ex-husband told me all the time that there was stuff wrong with me. And I started to believe that it was my fault that our marriage was as toxic as it was. It was, well, everything was my fault, really. We could sit here and list it for ages, but we'd use up the whole time. But everything, I truly believed I was fundamentally flawed. And I rang a psychologist. She said, look, I can't get you in for 4 weeks. And the receptionist said to me, have you thought about kinesiology? Because it sounds like you're under a lot of stress. And then she said to me, and by the way, who's got your back? And that was really the first time anyone had ever asked me about my relationships. And I burst into tears because I said, nobody, nobody's got my back. I'm holding all this up. And if I crumble, which is happening, the whole lot's going to fall down. And I still remember her when she said kinesiology. I'm like, what is that? I don't understand that. Oh, got no idea. But you know what? I'm desperate. Book me in. If you're sensing how stressed I am and you're a receptionist on the other end of the phone, there must be something going on. So anyway, I managed to get an appointment with this kinesiologist, and she said to me, you have no idea how emotionally abused you are, do you? And that really just changed my life. And 6 months to the day after that very first kinesiology session, I was actually sitting in the classroom learning how to become a kinesiologist, because even though at that point I still hadn't yet left my marriage, I realized that I was starting to connect all these parts of myself that I had forgotten about, that I had yet to explore. I started to understand why I was in the position I was in. Like, it just gave me a doorway to walk through.
Now, hang on a minute, Amanda. Yes. You're jumping ahead on me.
No, that's all right.
Look, what I love that story and the background and get the understanding, and I can relate to it so well because, yes, you know, hands up here, I experienced very, very similar, I would imagine, especially not even being allowed to be near your family, you know, that sort of thing. But like, you're coming halfway around the world, why couldn't you be in Adelaide with your family? And that's all part of that gaslighting. Yeah. That's all part of that program that they take you through. So I absolutely get that. I want you to just go back a little bit, because what we're talking about is loss of self.
Yes.
Now, I know exactly what you're talking about. But I don't know whether my listeners understand. What do you mean by loss of self? What do you mean by that?
For me, it's really interesting now with hindsight. I sometimes wonder if I ever actually knew myself, because of the way that I was brought up to be in this certain mold and container. But I still, I remember as a child being very peaceful, being a bit dreamy, being a bit, I guess even back then, if we had to categorize it, it would be a bit woo-woo. I was that fairy tales and daydreams kind of child. I loved make-believe and writing stories and imagination. And I lost that through my teenage years of trying to fit into the mold of who I was told I needed to be and who I perceived that other people wanted me to be. And I was so busy pleasing other people. I fell very much into that people pleaser. I wanted to do whatever made everybody else happy. And that in itself is a massive trauma response anyway. And we start to understand that the more we become trauma informed. And I think the longer I lived to what I thought everybody else wanted, the further away from my true self I became. And that true self really does get hidden behind our defense mechanisms, that defensiveness or reactiveness or people pleasing. They are all actually defense mechanisms. The way that we mold and shape ourselves to fit within our tribe, within our community, within our family, within our friend group. It's all of those pieces that we cut off, hide away, you know, repress, suppress because we're ashamed of them or we're embarrassed by them or we're told they're not the thing to be. We are told that they are not what good girls do. And as we move further away from our true nature and more into that, it is a conditioning. We are being conditioned to fit in a box that people want us in rather than being able to express our heart and soul into the world. That for me is what loss of self is.
Yes. Yeah, so, and when you're saying that, you're saying it starts as childhood. Your parents, you know, you have to fit into that mold. And I get that you need to fit into a certain mold, not necessarily mold, but a certain, you have to be mindful of other people around you. So you can't be rude and abusive and all the rest. And I don't really believe that would be you anyway. But yes, there is these certain things. But then when they're restricting you so much, you do lose that sense of who you are. You do start to look at, I'll do this if it's okay with everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll do this if that's okay.
I think our true nature is not to be rude and abusive. I think our true nature, as you say, absolutely is we want to fit into the tribe around us. If you think about, and I'm not using that in the culturally appropriative term, by the way, what I mean by, you know, our tribal nature is as humans, that's how we were designed. We were designed to live in tribes where there is safety in numbers. If we're not accepted by our tribe, we'll be cast out into the wilderness and die. And so every decision that we make in our life, even though we're not quite realizing it, is pretty much our brain is going, we do this and live or we do this and die. And it sounds extreme, but our brain only really works in black and white. And what happened for me, for example, my mother was quite explosive, and that's absolutely fine. I understand why. She had a very stressful life. You know, she was stressed hormonally. There was a lot of things going on in her body and physically that I understand because I ended up there myself as well. And yet that terrified me as a child. That really frightened me to my core when that explosion would happen. So my empathy and people pleasing actually came from me watching for that moment that things would flip and change. Because if I could stop things from flipping and changing, then I wouldn't be as terrified. I could keep myself safer. And so it became this survival mechanism. And I've only really put that together in the last couple of years, that this is actually where my people pleasing and my empathy started. If I could watch for those behaviors that would then flip the switch, if I could be good enough, if I could make her happy enough, then she wouldn't explode at me and I wouldn't be terrified and I wouldn't end up, you know, being smacked on the bum or whatever it was for minor transgressions.
Yeah, and then that went into your relationship. You just carried that forward.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And then you've got the minor stuff as well of the you must behave in this way, you must speak to adults this way, you must, whatever it is, there were all of these rules on how we were to externally behave in the world. But it also was strict then when we were inside the house, because that's where you learned the rules. And so there was no place to really fully explore who and what I was and wanted to be.
Okay. I remember that with my son. I was having an argument with my ex too about my son and my son's behavior. And I remember saying to him, if he can't behave that way in his own home, in his own room, where can he behave that way? Because that is who he is. Yeah. And I remember that. And that's what you're saying. It starts to become more clear. And yes, I probably was pretty tough on my kids too. Yeah. I was probably pretty, because of what I was experiencing, as you would have been doing.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
Yeah. You're copying it from your husband, as I was. And so you're then taking it out, not deliberately, but you were taking it out on the children. You don't absolutely need to do that. But yeah, because you've lost, you get to the stage where you're so controlled in so many ways that you do lose who you are and how you want to do things. And it wasn't until I started standing up and going, no, that was one of the times that I stood up when I said, if he can't behave like that in his own home, where can he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Stand up. Okay, so we've got an understanding now of our loss of self. Our loss of self is often happening because of those external influences. Even though we can sit there and blame external influences, the reality is we're taking them on board and we're internalizing them, and we're actually behaving accordingly.
Yes.
So now I know you've had the kinesiology to help you, and I had like that my aha moment when I went to a doctor, the same sort of thing. And lucky enough, you had a doctor that was open to alternate therapies, as mine was.
Oh, no. I left my doctor and sought out alternative therapies on my own.
That sort of thing. Yeah. And that's what I felt too. I didn't feel the regular doctors was going to help me. I needed to do something external at that or different to that. All right. So you've got an understanding now. You've got to the stage where you've just gone, shit, I don't know what to do anymore. And you start to look at alternate therapies. How did you go about that?
Do you know, it was a little bit strange in so many ways. I actually went to a gym with a naturopath, and that's what started me seeing a naturopath, funnily enough. And I guess it grew really from there, because I was seeing her and it was making a difference. And then somebody else I spoke to had talked to me about chiropractic, and I went to go see a chiropractor. And that was the first time I hadn't had back pain since I was about 16. So I'd had 20 years of this constant pain in my back. I still remember that first day I went, and I'm like, I can't feel my back. Oh my God, like, this is insane. I'd been living with it for so long, I didn't realize that it was as big a problem as it was until it wasn't there. And I'm like, whoa, this is weird. And from there, it really grew. You know, the way I found more alternative therapies was actually through that chance phone call to that particular psychologist and I rang her because she did mindfulness and meditation. She also did assertiveness courses. And I went, yeah, that's kind of what I need. So I went to her because I knew that she worked in a slightly more holistic way. And that just really appealed to me, because I'd seen psychologists before and it just felt like you were talking around and around and around the issue without actually having some tools to use to move you forward out of the issue. And so I was going, well, this isn't working, because all we're doing is talking about the issue, re-triggering what's going on. And then I'm going home feeling all of the triggers, and we're not solving what's going on and creating these issues.
Exactly the same. I went to a psychologist, and honestly, she must have just been out of uni. And I mean, I'm thinking, well, you know, she knows the theory. Yeah, she's never experienced this. She's not in that position. And I'm thinking to myself, I actually did say those exact words. What tools have you got that can help you?
Yep.
Oh no, we're just here so you can talk to us. And I'm going, well, that's not helping me.
I could go to a pub and sit across from a bartender and get the same thing for a hell of a lot less money.
And enjoy it.
until the next day. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. No. But yes, but that's exactly right. Yeah.
And then it was just that phone call. It was her receptionist suggesting kinesiology. And then once I'd seen the kinesiologist, I think I'd already started seeing a Chinese doctor potentially by then. It all kind of happened around the same time in terms of kinesiology, Chinese doctor. And there were about four professionals at the time that said, you've got chronic fatigue. And I went, oh, my goodness. And this was a couple of years after. So this was 2014, 2015 that I actually found out I had chronic fatigue. And yet I'd needed the naps back in 2013. And since then, I kind of just did that whole stoic, you know, I've just got to get through it, pull up your bootstraps, you know, fight on, just get through the day. Because my ex-husband used to say, oh, you're always exhausted. Everybody else is only tired. What's wrong with you? It's always got to be worse for you. And it wasn't until I literally had four professionals say, you've got chronic fatigue, that he took it seriously and went, oh, there's actually something wrong with you. And it was just fascinating, this whole, I guess, doorway opening into natural therapies and allowing me to start to understand that connection between what was expressing in this physical manifest reality and what was going on in the subconscious, in my mind, in my spirit, and at those other levels of my being, because that was actually what was creating the physical dis-ease and lack of wellness.
Right. So, and it's one of the things I've said on the podcast, and I say it, I don't say it every time. I say it as often as I can.
Yeah.
And you've just explained it all again, Amanda, is that it's never, not usually one thing.
No.
It's usually you're testing and trying different modalities, different things that help you come through. And like you said, you may have been seeing a Chinese doctor. I know I was seeing, I've gone into the Chinese herbs. Mm. I know I've gone into bush flower essence and flower essence. I've gone into crystals. And I experimented and tried and tested with so many, because I feel that all of these sort of external modalities they all work so nicely together. It's not like taking a medication that can give you side effects or that can give you that can clash with other medications. Mm. When you're doing kinesiology, you can still do bush flower essence. You can still do bark flower essence and other things that all work together, which is what's so really nice about the alternate therapies. But as you're talking about it, I want to get a bit a clearer understanding for the listeners too. What is kinesiology? Because I know we've talked about it. We've got this understanding of it. But I want to get a deeper knowledge of it that if it resonates with somebody, they may look for a kinesiologist or they may be able to connect with you and that sort of side to it. So what do you do? What is this all about?
So kinesiology blends that Eastern wisdom with Western science. And so we look at the chakra nadi system, we look at the traditional Chinese medicine, meridian systems and acupressure points, and we also blend it. Its roots are basically in that chiropractic type realm. What we are looking at doing is using manual muscle testing, so pressing on muscles. When I'm doing it with people online, I tune into their energy field and then I muscle test on myself. So it's like I'm tuning into your radio station right now so that we can have this conversation. I'm tuning into my client's radio station. The difference then is I also throw my energy over them like a blanket so that I can read what's going on in their field and I muscle test on myself. When it's clients in person, I will actually check their muscle tone. So I will press on some of their muscles, add pressure to it. And if you think about your nervous system like wiring in a house, if there is no stress in the system, that signal's strong, the light's on. If there is stress, then that signal will falter. And so we get what's called a weak muscle test or a, it's not really strong and weak, it's not quite the right word, but the muscle tone will give and there will be a pliancy there. And so in that we are able to bypass the conscious mind and access the subconscious, what's going on under the surface, what is happening in our I kind of call it that subconscious, unconscious, and also superconscious. We can access those other aspects of ourself through the body. And often people will consciously be on board with something. I've got this client who has all the conscious awareness, but subconsciously her body is telling her different things. And therefore, there's a fight going on. And we notice this all the time in sessions whereby people are like, yeah, but I know that. But your body doesn't. Your body is still being informed from this thing that you found traumatic. And so what we're doing is we are finding what we call the causal time. So the time that I guess the seed was planted for that either unresourceful behavior or for the stress that is stuck in the body. We want to find out what the emotion is that's stuck with it. So we will muscle test through. I've got charts and charts of different emotions. We will find, I guess, that shade of emotion that's sitting there. And then people will go, okay, that's all well and good. We know that. But then we want to know how it is relating to the issue that we're working on in current time, because you will find a link between the two. And what is happening is your body is going through something now. And it's, of course, looking through its memory bank, whether it be, you know, consciously or subconsciously, it's going back into our experience and going, okay, I'm faced with this situation. What are some of the behaviors that I've used before to get through these things? Now, obviously, when we're 2 years old, we may be choosing different tools than, say, when we're 32 years old. But our body doesn't always know the difference. It's going back into, well, this worked at this point, so let's try that behavior now. And that's where we get this link between the causal time of when that seed was planted and what's going on now, and we can link the two, I guess, traumas or the two events together, and then we can shift that vibrational pattern. And so it's bringing that subconscious awareness into the conscious mind so that people then, when they're faced with that same situation again, can go, whoa, hang on a minute. How do I actually want to be in this situation? Is there a different way that I can try? Now, the new way that they try may not be any better, but at least they're trying something new. They're going down a different path. They're creating a new neural pathway. And the way we shift those vibrational structures is with other vibrational remedies. So whether it be acupressure points, whether it be essential oils or bush or bark flower essences, which you've mentioned before, anything with a different vibration. Sound is one that I use a lot in clinic. I use a lot of tuning forks and sound bowls, because sound is the highest vibration that we have. And so I do use a lot of sound in clinic. Sometimes we get the client to hum or chant or whatever it is to actually move that voice and that vibration through the body. Other times it will be, you know, using that external tool to put the vibration into the body. But by changing that vibrational structure, we're effectively unhooking and unsticking the root cause of that pattern.
Okay, now I love how you've explained that. So what I'm picking up is that because of the changes in what you're doing and how you're making these, and especially the word when you say unstick, then what I see it as is it gives you, if a situation, it's not going to stop the situation, it's not necessarily going to stop how you respond to it, but what it does, it gives you a space, a bit of time, where you then can actually decide whether you want to go that way or whether you want to change it. So you're actually creating space almost, aren't you?
What we describe it as is we are going from reaction to response. Yeah. So reaction is it hits us and we go into that subconscious, we find that tool and we are in there before we even realize we're in there, you know. And my ex-husband was great at finding those trigger points that would put me straight back into those unresourceful patterns. Yet as I've done more and more work, I am able to almost see those events coming at me now and I can choose how to respond to them, because as you say, it almost slows things down. You're seeing this pattern repeating and you're going, hang on. And the way I describe it to clients is there's a few different ways. Sometimes we see it coming at us and we're like, hang on a minute, what do I choose here? Do I want to go down the same path or do I want to go down a different path? And that is the ideal place to notice it, of course. We then have an instance where we get ourselves into the reaction and then we're like, whoa, hold on a minute, I'm going down that path again, you know, and we can backtrack out of it sometimes. Other times we will start going into that reactionary pattern, and I call this one the mindful tantrum, and we're like, stuff it, I'm going in anyway. And I figure there is still something to learn in that. Other times we will notice after the behavior, whether it be hours, days, weeks, months, whatever it is, and we'll go, oh my God, I did that thing back there. Okay. And then other times we won't notice at all. Now, in each of those, there are lessons. And in each of those, there is growth to be had. And in all but the one where we're not noticing, we're changing our neural pathways because we're looking for those behaviors. We're looking for that change. We're looking for, how is this feeling in my body? And how much do I want that sensation to control me? Do I want that trigger to be literally, you know, I guess us pulling the trigger for that reaction? Or do I want to notice that trigger, take a deep breath, be okay that that trigger's there, and respond differently anyway, and then work on why that trigger's there in the first place? And that's the way I look at kinesiology is, you know, when people are activating you, it's like you've got all of these plug sockets in your body and they're, you know, shoving knitting a needle into them, and they're getting you're getting a bit of a shock. There's that reaction. And it's a really visceral physical reaction. We feel it in our body. Now, as we do the healing, it's like we're putting those childproof plugs all through those different plug sockets, and people can't access them anymore. They can't get the knitting needles in there. So, as you know, my ex-husband now will, not that I have much to do with him, but even towards the end of last year, we had our last major, interaction that we need to have. And he was straight in there trying to trigger. And I'm just watching him going, oh, this is so sad. And rather than getting drawn into it, I could see that he was just trying to get energy. And I was like, yeah, this isn't going to happen. This is not how I'm doing this. And I walked off.
Yes.
And yeah. That's
hang on, I've got to jump in
difference.
There.
Because yeah.
I love how you've said that. And that was the one thing I was aware of too, after a period of time. You know, you sort of went, hang on, I can see exactly what you're doing. Yeah. I know exactly. Mm. You are trying to press my buttons and get a response. And how empowering is it when you've done all that work and you can sit there and go, I can see what you're doing and it's not affecting me.
Yeah.
That's the empowering. But what you did say, which is I want to bring forward too, because you said, because we're talking about external influences and internal, what you said was you can feel it in your body. So you've taken that external influence that's happening around you, and that makes it a concrete for other people, listeners, and they say, oh, is that what, because you're so focused on, he just called me this or he just said that. Well, one of my plugs, as you call it, one of my sockets was when he would have a go at me about my children, about the children, and it was basically, you're not a good mother, aspect, you know, and that was a real yeah, okay, that was a real trigger.
Yeah.
That would get me every time. So that was one of those things. And as I started working on myself, that became really obvious. And I went through those five or six stages that you talked about. I wasn't aware. Then I sort of went, I responded and went, oh, I shouldn't have responded like that. I could have done that better. And then I went to the next stage where I felt myself responding and gone, oh, stop it, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And then a little bit remorse after it. And then I went to the next stage where I went, oh, I know what he's doing. Mm. And then, you know, that final stage where I know what he's doing and it's not affecting me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is the thing. It takes time. People expect this to be a take a pill and you're done, because that's what the way that we're trained in this society is. But this, you know, for me, it's been a 10-year process plus of me starting to stand up for myself. You know, back at the very start, I still remember the first time I said it. I said to him, you treat me like I'm a piece of shit on the bottom of your shoe and you're just trying to wipe me off. And I remember the first time I said it and he was like, oh, you know, and that was actually when our marriage started getting more and more toxic because I stopped just accepting the abuse that was being hurled at me. I started kind of, I guess for the first time, believing I deserved something other than being spoken to in that disgusting way all the time and to be constantly maligned and put down. And so you're right, there are, it's been this 10-year process of me uncovering the next layer and the next layer and the next layer. And there is a dedication to what I've done. And there's a lifelong practice to what I have done and am doing. And it's not a quick fix, but what it is a permanent fix.
Yes.
And that's the beauty yes. of it. It is, absolutely. And I'm not saying I don't slip into unresourceful behaviors. Hand up, I do. Yes. I still do. Of course I do, because I'm human. Yes. And also I catch them sooner. I apologize for them sooner. I make reparations sooner because I recognize that that is not who I want to be in this world. That is not how I want to behave. That is not the person I want to be.
Yes, because you have found yourself. And even if you don't feel like you've found yourself, you've found the path and the direction that you want to be on, not what everybody else wants you to be on. And that's what makes it so, so beautiful. I really love that. But Amanda, I do want to talk about, because we're starting to get through on our time, I do want to talk about part of what we were talking about is how to find your divine messy human. Now, this is really... what I like about this contradiction, because we've grown up like, you've got to be like this, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. Being messy, being divine, you know, like thinking you're better than anybody else, you know, that sort of attitude is so opposite to what we've gone through as far as in this gaslighting, as far as, you know, those relationships go. So how, now what I do have to say is Amanda's written a book and it's called Divine Messy Human, A Spiritual Guide to Prioritizing Inner Truth Over External Influences. Now, just the heading, Divine Messy Human, give us a bit more of that one.
Well, I think it's exactly what you're saying. We are taught to deny our divinity and try and fit ourselves into boxes from a very early age. And our messiness is, we paper this facade over it so that our parents can be proud of their good children. And that, you know, I always call it that curtain twitching is what I grew up with, was what will the neighbors think? You know, you've got to have on your best behavior all the time. And all of those things that aren't actually connecting us to our divinity. It is denying our humanity. It is denying that messiness. And being human is messy. My parents did the best they could and they love me dearly and I love them dearly and I know they did the best they could. And also, I did the best I could with my children and I've still screwed up multiple times. And I've told them as much. I said, anytime you're ready to go to therapy, I'm willing to come and, you know, work with you through what I need to work with you through. because I know I've traumatized them. Because when we go to trauma, trauma is anything that we embody as less than nourishing and nurturing. So we can store constant criticism as trauma in our body. And we have that same effect as bigger traumas in our lives, often with these small, consistent traumas. And so when we start to reframe trauma in that respect, we start to understand this conditioning much, much better. Now, with my life, the reason it got to divine messy human, I denied my divinity because I had noticed the hypocrisy of a lot of church-going people who were holier than thou within the building and then walked out and were the same asshole they were before they walked in. Yes. And it was like, oh, that doesn't kind of fit with what you're preaching in there. You know, if Jesus is this teacher of love and he dined with lepers and prostitutes and all of the filth of society, and he accepted and loved that, and he fought against, you know, bureaucracy and these systemic power structures. And, you know, he was quite a revolutionary dude at the time, like seriously. Yeah. And I'm going, you're spouting these messages, yet you're coming out and there's racism and homophobia and elitism and all of those isms and phobias and what have you. It's this false idolatry of divinity. It is a dogma and a ritual of divinity. It's not true divinity. So I started to deny my divinity. I was holding up this facade of perfection. I was holding up this facade that I had my shit together, that I was in a great marriage, that, you know, things were rosy and beautiful. And I was doubling down on making sure that that facade was held up, and I was papering over the cracks constantly and trying to put up this fact that I had my shit together when I really, truly didn't. And it made my human existence really, really tough. Now, as I've gone through this path, I am connecting more and more to the divine within myself. I'm connecting more to the divine within others. I see the divine in myself and in others. Even when we are all acting resourcefully, I can see that divinity within. Even when at the end of last year, I had my ex-husband come at me, make himself bigger and threaten me, I still could see that child within him, the angry teenager who was protecting that hurt child. I could see the divinity of that child who just doesn't know any better. Mm. And that messiness is what makes our human experience easier. The less I've denied my messiness, the more I've owned all of my shitty behaviors. You know, people out there call themselves light workers. I'm not a light worker. I am a balanced worker. I am a harmony worker. If we cannot balance our light and our dark, if we cannot accept our dark, life is not all love and light and rainbows and unicorns and fluffy memes and all of that. It is hard at times. We go through grief. We have this full expression of humanity. We are sad and angry and grief-stricken, and we are joyful and loving and awestruck at times. There is literally this entire tapestry of human experience that we are here to experience. So for me, it is about accepting the totality of that, the wholeness of that. And that makes our human experience easier to manage. Even when shit gets hard, I still have this anchor within me, this knowingness that there is something bigger guiding me. I have this connection to that divinity that in those moments of toughness, even when I've been on my knees, literally praying for God to take me home, I have also known that he has a big, he, she, it, it's an energy, so I shouldn't genderize. That's my conditioning coming through right there. That energy of infinite wisdom, of divine intelligence, is anchored into me so deeply now that when the tumultuousness happens, when that deep pain and grief hits me, I still have that anchor. I'm still tethered. And I can sit with the messiness and be with the messiness and know that it will pass, as painful as it is in that moment, that I will get through it. And if anything, you know, it's easy to feel incredible when we're feeling incredible. That's easy. It's doing the work when we feel good so that in those moments we have something to hold on to.
Oh, that is so beautiful words. Thank you so much for that. And it is true. When you're feeling good, everything's easy to do. So that's when you actually do need to do the work. Because yeah, it's really hard to do the work when you're not.
Oh, you can't, because you're in the wrong part of your brain. Whereas if you've practiced the practices, and they are practices, it's so much easier.
Yeah. Now, Amanda, have you got that in your book? So Divine Messy Human, A Spiritual Guide to Prioritizing Internal Truth Over mm-hmm. External Influences. So that's mm-hmm. all part of your book. And can we get your book on your website, amandakate.com.au?
Yes, it's on Kindle, and there you go.
For those who are listening to audio.
Yes.
So Amanda Kate is A-M-A-N-D-A and Kate, K-A-T-E, .com.au, so Australian business. One of the things before, because we are getting a bit low on time.
Yes.
One of the things I do want to acknowledge, I guess the word is, acknowledge, is that your name, your business name, Amanda Kate, I would imagine that is like Susan Jane in the fact that Amanda is your first name and Kate is your second name.
Kate was my middle name. Yes. But I made it my surname after divorce because I didn't want my ex-husband's name and I didn't want my maiden name.
That's exactly what I have done. Jane isn't my surname. I just go by that for social media reasons. But and my book is under Susan Jane because I felt exactly I didn't want to be my ex. I didn't want to be my maiden name. I wanted to be me. And that was part of finding myself.
Well, here's an interesting fact that I didn't know until after I'd legally. So legally, Kate is my surname. Yeah. But it was probably a year or so after I'd changed my name that I was told that all surnames belong to men because women were always property of men. And so even those women who fight to keep their maiden name are still fighting to keep a man's name. And it is about that ownership structure. We never had our own surnames. It was always men. And so I guess that just made it feel even more right that I'd done that and made that choice to fully belong to myself.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. It's like, no, I don't want to be part of, I didn't look at it as men, but I did. But now when you say that.
It's a patriarchal structure system. So absolutely. We don't look at it as that because that's the water we're swimming in. And we don't know we're wet because we're swimming in the water.
Yeah, you don't know there's a dry. You don't know there's a dry. So when I saw Amanda Kate, I'm thinking, oh, wow, I like that. And my sister, she has put hers just, and I mean, she's still in a marriage, but she did it for security reasons. Yeah. But, yeah, it's lovely to see these names coming out and us standing in our own true self after everything we've gone through. So. Yeah. I really want to thank you so much for being on the show. Any last little tidbits you've got for us before we say goodbye?
I always, as I just love to tell people, you've got all the answers within you. Now, yes, we sometimes need professional help to interpret those answers, but you always know the truth. And shop your practitioners around. Not everybody is going to be right for you. I think more people spend time researching their next new car or their next new pair of shoes and not the people who are working with their spiritual, mental, and emotional health. So I think that it's really worth taking advantage of those free calls that most practitioners have on their websites, giving people a call, having a conversation, and allowing yourself to feel into, does it feel safe to work with this person? Does it feel like this is the kind of person who can hold space for me as I find those answers and as we facilitate that healing? So they're my favorite points to just remind people of. Thank you, Susan Jane, for all the work you're bringing into the world as well. You just appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you. So, guys, I'll just jump onto my solo. Thank you, Amanda. Jump onto website, amandakate.com.au. Now, you can pop in and talk to her there. She will be able to help you there. And we obviously can do it from overseas as well. We just got to find the right timing. So, amandakate.com.au. Have a look at it. It's amazing. The website's lovely, actually. I just jumped on before I got in. I like to stalk my guests. You know, that's the thing you do. You just do that. How lovely. When you can really resonate with somebody that you know is going through all that and that's what I was going to say too, a good practitioner, as Amanda said, see if you resonate with the practitioner. A good practitioner will also go, hang on, I don't think I can help you. Or I can help you. A good practitioner will actually acknowledge whether you're going to work together as well. So don't, if they're just taking you on because they want the money, then, and it's not feeling right for you, go by your internal, as she said, go by your internal and judge it on that, you know, decide on that way because that's your intuition coming through. But that is it. I'll take Amanda's little ticker tape off. That is it from today, from the Voice of Intuition podcast. Share, like, subscribe to the podcast and jump onto Amanda's website and have a quick look at it. It's an Australian business, remember? So don't forget the .au at the end. That is all from us here at the Voice of Intuition. I hope to see you next week and I will say bye for now. Okay, see you guys. Bye.